Welcome to the studio, Patrick. How do you like your new digs here at the OTF production offices?
Really? We're pretending it's a studio? We're pretending the Skype calls like a recording?
Shh! Listen. So I was thinking, we should take some of our pre-show banter and work it into, you called it again? A dead drop?
Wait, what? What the fuck? You mean a cold open? Yeah, okay, no, I was thinking of, like, little canned pieces, maybe? You know, they could either be recorded shenanigans or maybe reenactments of said shenanigans. You know, that kind of thing.
Shenanigans, you say? Well, I was thinking of, you know, funny stuff.
Whoa, hold on. Wait a sec. Are you saying that, like, we're not normally funny?
Well, we're all a little funny. But yeah, I'd like these pieces to be fun as well as comedic.
No. See, there, you're saying it again. You're saying that, like... Okay, what are you trying to say? Just freaking spit it out.
I'm saying I just baited you and turned this into one of our cold opens. Thanks for playing.
Oh my god, you are such a fucking bastard. You know that, right?
Oh hey, David, why don't you get the show started?
Righto. On this month's Over the Fence, Direct Drive is now Gamefly. Some bits fly away. Steam's growth is in its seventh year of doubling profits. We talk about our game of the year for 2011, and my impressions of Star Wars The Old Republic. All that and more on Over the Fence for January 2012. Welcome to Over the Fence, a podcast where adventure gamers discuss the worlds of gaming, entertainment, and technology. Today we have with us John.
Hello.
Patrick.
Hi.
And your host, me, David. So guys, let's kick things off. So it looks like digital distribution is really getting into gear here as a general industry.
Well, we all knew it was coming. I mean... Direct2Drive, I don't know if either of you have used it. I have, simply because when I went to buy Rainbow Six Vegas years ago, I couldn't actually find a store that was selling it. And this is like 2 weeks after it came out. I couldn't find a PC version. That's where PC gaming has been kind of troublesome at that point. It was just really narrowing down. I remember going to Best Buy and having like, you know, six or seven aisles of PC games, and now it's like there's like two shameful shelves over by the PC hardware.
I almost miss those days, except that I don't like going out into the store anymore, so.
Yeah. So most of the purchased games you have should be available after the move, except I've already repurchased everything on Steam and don't care. But if you have purchased any Prima strategy guides, I should purchase one. That's going away. And the interesting part to me about this Direct2Drive is that they're creating something called Unlimited PC Play through the GameFly client, which is sort of Steam-like, but it's also sort of GameTap-like, if you remember GameTap, where you logged into this client and you could get instant access to these games, of course, once you downloaded the sufficient client-side files.
Right.
And a lot of the games offered in that listing, if you've looked it up, and I have, are pretty old. You know, Prince of Persia, Sands of Time. I mean, they're not terrible games. I'm not saying that at all. It's just, you know, they're old enough that, you know, the downloads are pretty small.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it works.
In that sense.
Yeah. So,
I mean, GameTap, if nothing else, it definitely had a good system for those old games like that, where you could, you know, with how small they were, you could just basically click and play because it downloaded and it snapped as long as you actually had broadband, which nowadays, who doesn't?
There's still some folks out in the boonies, but either way, the important thing
I'm out in Montana right now. We still have good internet.
Depends.
As far as I'm concerned, if you don't have broadband, then you suck.
And you are a hillbilly.
Well,
yes.
I bought three games because of my experience on GameTap, because I had games on there that I wanted, and I knew this. I was going to stop subscribing to the service, so I wanted the games, you know, to go forward. And so that worked for me. But I think the important takeaway here is that I think we're really moving in a streaming direction with games. Examples include OnLive, if you've heard of it. I think that's where things are really heading. So maybe may come to a point that... we don't load local content anymore. And I don't mean just games. I mean, like, the Apple TV doesn't even have any storage in it anymore. It just streams. The next Xbox may have internal storage, but it may not even have a disk drive. Who knows? It may just, you know, you have to download the games. You have to have broadband, and if you don't, you know.
Well, they're trying to push putting your save games on a cloud server now. Like, with the latest Xbox update, I don't remember which it was, they added that. And
well, I know the cloud service they put on the PlayStation, you know, sucks balls. I don't know what the Xbox one is like. So I think Steam has the right approach, but it's not global, so it's hard to, you know, decide whether
or not. Yeah, I definitely like the cloud syncing over cloud storage.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to have, like, a cloud save, local and remote, so in case my local goes bad or whatever. But I would like, you know, as far as Steam goes, I would love to just have that shit out of my damn documents folder. You know, because I don't know about you guys, but I last I counted, there's about 20 folders in my documents from all the various different games that I've seen where they decide to put shit. But moving forward, Steam, which is, you know, our vaunted favorite digital distribution, although I should point out, it was not always so. When Steam first came out, I think I was among many who was like, I don't want to have this junk. I just want to play my game.
Yeah.
But I think that they built value into that. I mean, the social abilities, the ability to actually go to websites while you're in game. You know,
they definitely made a plethora of improvements, both in tweaking mistakes that they made and making, you know, improving those for the better. And just adding features in general.
Yep.
And I think it shows with the nearly double increase they've had in this 7 years now.
Yes. So they've been – Steam's sales have increased 100% 7 years straight now. Mm. So every year they're doubling their sales.
And I think that's a feat to be applauded, to say the least.
Yeah. But, you know, what's funny is, like, you'll see posts where people will say stuff on forums and comment sections about, you know, how PC gaming is a dying thing. Like, you're not paying attention to the numbers. That's what you think. And I got an Xbox at first just because, like, all these games, these great games were not coming to the PC. And then somebody flipped a switch and everything pretty much came to the PC. The only game of note on the Xbox that I can think of that didn't come is Gears of War. I mean, yes, Gears of War was ported. The first one was, but it's you can't run it today.
I haven't seen any of the Halos aside from the first one come to PC either. But
well, no, they had Halo 2 on PC, but
it's restricted to Vista, which is annoying. So yeah, there's some craziness there, but most everything else, Assassin's Creed 2, Mass Effect, everything that was important to me on the console ended up on the PC, in which case the console is superfluous to me now. And even the Kinect is coming to the PC. But important numbers about Steam, they had a simultaneous peak login of 5 million users, which is pretty impressive. So there are supposed to be 11 million subscribers into WoW, but is there 11 million constantly logged in? I'm willing to bet there isn't. They're working on more free-to-play to add to their selections like Team Fortress 2. And they're coming up with a big picture mode with a Steam in your living room. This part kind of scares me because the big value of Steam is PC gaming, which is keyboard and mouse. And in your living room, a keyboard and mouse makes less sense. Unless you've got a really nice armchair with a nice arm that the mouse can work on, and a good wireless keyboard.
Or else a very thin arm with a nice arm-level coffee table.
Well, I've got to be straight with you, though. Like, I, over Christmas break, I told you guys this before, I started using the Xbox 360 wireless controller for PC. And honestly, like, I think my PC gaming experience is, like, changed forever now. It just improves it a lot. Just the freedom of mobility, I guess you'd say. I don't have to lean in.
It's one of those things where, you know, before it happened, you know, you kind of look at it and go, oh, I don't need that. And now you have it, and it's like, how did I ever live without this?
Yeah. Well, I understand the Xbox 360 controller to me is a perfect add-on to PC gaming, especially with so many games natively supported, so you don't have to, like, figure out where the configuration goes. So, you know, Assassin's Creed and Assassin's Creed 2 being two that need fixing,
mm-hmm.
but two games that I consider require a gamepad. Like it's there are people who say it works fine with the mouse and keyboard. I'm like, then you haven't played games that have done it right. Because Batman is one that works perfectly with mouse and keyboard, mm-hmm. but I think it could work just as good with the controller.
But I mean, there's an example right there of some way that this the living room thing could work. You know, especially if you had like a controller. But begins to sound like a console, but
there's a massive library of games though.
Yeah, that's
so
the difference.
There's a lot of them are PC and don't even acknowledge a controller, much less work with one. So I don't know how that's going to work, or maybe there'd be a limited selection. But it's a good idea to look forward. I mean, I think come what may, I think gaming is going to move into the living room one way or the other. Mm-hmm. My cousins, I let him play Battlefield 3 on my computer with an Xbox 360 controller because I have the controller.
Right.
So I just let him play that way, although I would never play that way. And he liked it. Now he wants it for his Xbox. I said, why don't you get it for your PC? He's like, why? I'm like, I like playing the 360 controller. I'm like, you can still use the 360 controller. He's like, well, I like playing on my TV. I'm like, I can still send your PC signal to your TV because it's in the same room. You know, so I can fix everything you need so that, you know, then you can play with me.
Yeah.
On the Xbox, you can.
Right.
The thing that bothers me, though, I mean, I know that I want choice to remain there so that, you know, controllers are not required and keyboard and mouse aren't required. You know?
Yeah.
Let the choice remain.
Yeah.
And I know that's going to gimp some people because, you know, controllers, I don't care how you slice it, no matter how good you are with a controller, you get up against a primo PC gaming person. If you could put the two in the same room together, the PC game is going to win hands down.
Oh, yeah. Just...
But, I mean, honestly, there you go right there. Like, one of the things I like best about PC gaming, you know, over console gaming is just the fact that there's usually just – there's a lot more options.
Yep.
You know, there's many different ways you can play. You know, there you can set it up how you want most, you know, for the most part.
Yeah,
and
you can work. You can play on a primo rig like mine or a sucky rig like yours,
like mine. Yeah, but like I'm willing to sacrifice that because I like the freedom of being able to choose.
Yeah,
you know, godly rig
my options instead of having it like forced on me, which is usually my experience with.
Well,
console.
Unless John upgraded since the last time that we talked about rigs.
Yeah, I am about to actually, but that's another story. Yeah,
but not yet. So it's not yet. Mine's still the godly rig.
having two monitors, I found that I need more VRAM, so I need to fix that. Yeah, so
speaking of how many games are available on Steam, and we all know that Steam loves to do their sales and sales and more sales and more sales, and we just
the midweek madness, the weekend madness, and their holidays and the Black Friday and. Midsummer.
So now we got into the winter sales. So, of course, we got a score for Christmas or, you know, whatever holiday you celebrate. What did you guys get?
I'm going to be the most boring, so I'll go first. I was complaining that I was out of money because I had paid off my credit card. So I pretty much blew my entire discretionary chunk on that one paycheck on that credit card. So I was going to miss the sale. And Star Wars The Force Unleashed was on sale for like $7 or $5. And I bought it on the consoles, but I would like to have it on PC because I just never want to fire up the Xbox anymore. I'd rather play games on the PC.
Yeah.
And so I bought Eric Mass Effect 2's Digital Deluxe Edition last year. And so he returned the favor buying me The Force Unleashed this year.
Mm.
But the sales, I mean, I was tempted by a few things, but I keep saying, you know, I've been rebuying part of my back catalog of games, you know, stuff that I've had before I really got into Steam.
Yeah.
And I install them, I play them for like 5 minutes, and I'm like, it's old.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And I get rid of it. So I was like, okay, I mean, I don't really want, like, my friend James from Australia bought me in the early fall sale that we had, he bought me Max Payne 2, and I started playing it, and I'm like, oh my god, like, I think the place where I hit the wall is I died and I hadn't done the F5 save and I lost all my progress. And I was like, fuck that. I'm too babied by the autosave. So I just like, oh, I don't even feel like replaying all that again. So I realized maybe that's how hardcore PC games used to be, but that was enough to say, okay, I installed it. So anyway, what about you, David? Did you get any good stuff from the sales?
Unfortunately, I did not. However, for Christmas, I still did get gaming-related paraphernalia, including an awesome Liara T-shirt. So
yeah, I saw that picture.
So that's what I made out with this holiday season.
That's what you made out with.
I see what you
wish.
I bet that is.
Patrick, you were all over the place, so I know you've got some.
Oh my god, score. So many things. Well, like I started out not expecting that to have that much because, you know, I didn't have a lot of money because whatever. You know, my friend got me the indie pack, the humble indie bundle, and they have like freaking like 15 games in it. So I had all these games, and they're all really great. I enjoy all of them. But you know, I took advantage of the sale to get myself a couple things that I've really been wanting, like L.A. Noire, Deus Ex. But of course, most of my time has gone to Skyrim, which, I mean, you guys know. I mean, you see how much I've played. I've poured like 40 hours into that thing or something. It's just like it might be the greatest game I've ever played. Just
I'm a little surprised. And you, as much as you bash Oblivion, I'm surprised Skyrim sucked you in. I mean, I know it's definitely an improvement in many levels, but it still has the same grind-tastic approach.
No, I never really bashed Oblivion. I just, you know, I just didn't get into it as much as I still really liked it, but yeah. Like, I can't go back to it now after having played Skyrim. I look at Oblivion, I'm like, wow, I can't play this.
It's it's kind of like if after you play Oblivion, like Morrowind just looks way too
primitive. No, exactly.
Yeah, so.
I'm just going to blatantly say this here. Oblivion bored me.
See, I got Oblivion. I played all the way through the storyline, and I remember the main quest line. You have this one guy who you have to keep doing quests for, and you keep coming back. And it's like, okay, now you do this. And like
Sean Bean.
Yeah, and okay, now you should do this. And like, okay, this is getting fucking old, you know. And so I just started hammering on the main quest line stuff because it just seemed like it just kept running on and on and on. Skyrim, if you make that mistake, it'll flip a switch and everything suddenly becomes a whole lot harder. So you want to make sure that you're done leveling up before you hammer on the main quest line.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Damn it. That could be why everything's really difficult right now.
Yeah, start picking up side quests and level up all your other skills. The other thing about Oblivion is that it only leveled up the skills that related to the classes you picked. So even if you decided you wanted to use a sword, if you're supposed to be a stealth archer type of dude, the sword stuff never levels up. And that was like, that was really, I think that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
I think, anyway, we've covered that before, but I think an important piece of news regards to the Steam sales is that Steam is not going to be selling Mass Effect 3.
Giant sigh.
So I'm not sure my resolve on this one. At this point, they're adding in co-op multiplayer. They fucked up Dragon Age 2. And I don't have the faith in BioWare to pull an awesome Mass Effect 3 under these two conditions. So I'm probably going to hold off for reviews to see if it's worth anything. Yeah. And I've got Battlefield 3 on Origin, and I'm really ready not to use Origin for anything else ever again.
I really, 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 really want Mass Effect 3 to show the same kind of improvement that Mass Effect 2 showed over the first one. But that doesn't always happen. So I'm kind of wary, especially with EA pulling their whole jealousy routine and making Mass Effect 3 exclusive to Origin.
I think they rush a lot of stuff, I really do, because it just Battlefield 3 shows the game itself looks good. It runs well if you have enough hardware, but there's a lot of component pieces that add up to it. It has me thinking, well, maybe they just decided to do this last minute, and that's why this stuff seems so unfinished.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think that they've delayed Mass Effect 3 to hopefully get it finished, but I've read multiple reviewers who have said that the combat is broken in Mass Effect 3, and not just the co-op. And every demo they've seen, it's been broken. Like, so this is up until, I think, November is the last time I heard news about it. So if they pushed it to, I think, March, am I right? Or was it May they pushed it to?
March. March was the last that I heard, because it was like 3/6/12 the release date. So I know it was some kind of multiplier like that. I'm sure it was some kind of marketing.
So if the combat was broken as, you know, recently as a couple months ago, that's a big deal. I mean, that's like the game's not even close to being finished.
Right.
Kind of broken. So again, I'm gonna wait for reviews on it, and I may not get it.
Yeah,
so.
And as an action RPG, combat is a major part of the game. So exactly. Broken combat means broken game.
Yeah.
So that's, I thought that was an interesting point. Yeah. I'm not trying to talk people out of getting it. If people want it, that's fine. It'll probably play perfectly if you get it on a console. But of course, we are PC gamers. And
mm-hmm. Well, I mean, here's my whole thing about Mass Effect 2. Like, I remember I was very excited for it at one point. And then, you know, when I started seeing demos of it, I was sort of like, this is rubbing me the wrong way for some reason. And, you know, when I started suspecting, oh, they're just going to do it on Origin, aren't they? And so by the time they announced it's only going to be on Origin, I was like, well, I'm not even that surprised. But,
yeah,
like, honestly, it's kind of weird, but the ending to Mass Effect 2 kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Like, in a way that
I think it's
felt
supposed to.
Like, in a way that I know it's supposed to, but it kind of made me just feel pretty much ambivalent about there being a sequel.
Well,
like,
the
I felt
next
like
one
I didn't
is,
really need it.
The next one, it's kind of getting clear. I mean, the reason the ending is kind of strange, kind of puts the pieces together for what we've found out about the story in the next one. But in any case, moving forward, we're now ensconced in 2012.
Oh, yes.
So,
don't
David,
pronounce it that way. It's 2012. You're
2012.
So antiquated.
So, David, what was your game of the year for 2011?
My game of the year for 2011. That's a good question. Probably do it Deus Ex then, because I really enjoyed that game. It had really good gameplay. The story was more than halfway decent. And although I haven't played through it multiple times, you know me, I don't play through a lot of games a whole lot. The only game that I have played through insane amount of times was Mass Effect and Mass Effect 2 in particular.
Yeah, I think that Deus Ex doesn't reward you as much for the replay throughs, but the DLC does. DLC has a lot of differentiation based upon how you play. So.
Yeah, I heard you say you're talking about that the other day. You're saying how the environment really changes depending on what you do in the DLC.
Well, it's just more so how people react to you. Like if you've been sneaky, they acknowledge that you're like a ghost. If you're kind of in the middle, they complain about you. You know, people don't have to die for this. And then if you pretty much kill everyone you come across, everyone's afraid of you, and with good reason. That's one of the things, like, there's a point in the main core campaign of Deus Ex where this reporter gives me attitude. I was like, what the fuck? Do you not realize I have katana blades hidden in my arms? And so I kill him. But then that pisses off the cops who are standing nearby, and then I've killed them too. I'm like, see what you did to him? Now I have to kill everybody. and the game doesn't, John. Like, the game doesn't, like, stop you from doing it, except that you have to be careful, because if you aggro too much attention, it's really hard to survive.
Right.
Because this is the kind of game, regardless that you are armored and bulletproof vest, whatever, you can still only take a certain finite amount of damage.
Right, and if you get, you know, crap ton of enemies on you all at once, you're not invulnerable.
That's the one thing about Deus Ex, is it looks very like, you know, you're the Terminator, but it's more so like you're a SWAT guy with some impressive body armor. That's about
right.
Love it. And so
some
if you
impressive other gear too.
Yeah, if you think you're gonna run in there like Call of Duty and just hide behind the console and regain your health, well, that's not the way it works. It literally does not. It regenerates that one battery, but that's it. Your health actually doesn't regenerate past a certain point.
Okay. Well, I definitely agree that I agree with you about Deus Ex. Like, definitely. Like, I think in terms of storytelling, even, just, you know, much more compelling than most of what we saw this year.
Yeah.
But even though I liked Deus Ex, and even though I gotta say Portal 2 was great, I still gotta say that my game of the year is actually Skyrim. If only because I've probably put more hours into Skyrim than any other game I've ever seen.
I've ever played. Came out this year.
There are a lot of games that I wish that I could say that, you know, they were my game of the year, but like Skyrim just takes the cake, and you know, I can't argue. Just it's addictive.
Well,
so clearly they're doing something right, you know.
Yeah, for some reason I was thinking that Portal 2 came out last year. Otherwise, I would have said
because 2011 has been so long. That's why I had to sit down and like write them down.
Yeah,
and
exactly. I would have said that. Yeah. Otherwise, I would have picked Portal 2 for my game of the year.
Other strong contenders for game of the year, though, like at least just in terms of,
I haven't played L.A. Noire, so I don't want to say that it's a game of the year, but I think that its use of technology, like for the facial animations, is really revolutionary, and I like that it tries to push the envelope a little bit. I don't know if the game itself is any good.
Games that did that this year.
I don't know if the game itself is any good, but I think it deserves honorable mention just because of how much it like really tries to, you know, push things forward. And another game that I similarly think deserves an honorable mention is Bastion. And I say this because, again, sort of like Deus Ex, it really it uses this very innovative approach to storytelling and gameplay that like really no other game has really done before. And even though really at its core it's just like a basic sort of bash 'em up sort of game, it really feels different. It feels like nothing else you've ever played before. And also the soundtrack is kick-ass, but that's beside the point.
I love kick-ass soundtracks. Yeah. Portal 2 had an awesome soundtrack too. Like I said, if I could take it back and make Portal 2 my game of the year, because I would. I loved the soundtrack. I loved the story. It was not, I would say, the best story of a game I've ever played, but it was definitely well written, and I liked it because it was clever and funny.
I think the execution overall from start to finish was well done in Portal.
Yeah, and yeah, because the acting and everything, you know, the acting and direction was, you know, so good as well that it really came together in a really highly polished product. You know, it took that new style of gameplay that was introduced with the original Portal and then gave it the AAA treatment as far as story goes and you know, other production as far as music and that kind of thing.
So speaking of story and carrying the game, we have a new, very strong story-focused MMO that you're very interested in enjoying your time playing.
Oh, yes. Star Wars The Old Republic. I love you so.
Oh, BioWare, you're always making us talk about you, aren't you?
Scandalous. So you've played it from the beta. You played in two of the beta?
I played in two of the beta weekends, and we talked about this a little bit in our last podcast. As far as I was mentioning that it had some issues as far as performance, which have nearly all been addressed. The most forefront one that comes to mind is the fact that it had serious issues tabbing out and in and out of game, which are not as pronounced anymore. It's a lot more smooth on my computer. On my laptop, which is not as beastly of a machine, doesn't handle it quite as well, but it's still pretty much fine. It still has pop-in, but they have a kind of loading screen that they use to cover it up, which is not ideal, but I guess it's better than
the pop-in if you all tab back in.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it has a screen to cover that up, but it's, you know, if you're looking for it, you know it's there.
Mm-hmm.
I've made a few characters. I don't know if either of you have played the game so far.
I've only played the one beta weekend.
Okay, so my main character is a smuggler. Yeah, Ghost Smuggler. I think the fun part about that is just the smuggler has the opportunity to be so much of a wisecracker, and I love the wisecracking characters.
I'm hearing they have the best storyline of all the stuff that's in there.
Yeah, I haven't played a whole lot through the other storylines. When I was playing the Trooper in beta, I really enjoyed that one too. The smuggler is very much you don't have to be, but you as like they were talking about in like previews and stuff, you know, being Han Solo, you definitely have the opportunity to feel like a Han Solo. Spoiler alert. There's this one part where like you have a Sith try to mind trick you, and so one of the responses you get to have is because she's trying to get you to kill your Jedi ally. And I'm like, no, I'd rather kill you instead. So I liked that. But beyond that, I haven't tried a whole lot of characters, but the general polish seems really good. You know, it definitely follows that trend as far as taking what works and implementing it in, you know, a mixture that works. So,
so it pulls from multiple different categories, World of Warcraft, Mass Effect, things like that.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, like the way that WoW pulled what worked from EQ and made it work better. Tor has done the same thing.
As an interesting aside, have you ever looked at screenshots of EQ or have you ever played EQ?
EQ was my first MMO.
Yeah, I looked at it and I was like, I can't believe people played this. I wonder if we're going to reach a point where we see the same stuff about today's games.
Yeah.
It's, it and, looks forward.
That's
it
after
forward.
The graphics update. I don't know if they've done another one since the first one that they did. But
there's also the fact that somebody in relation to EQ had his character deleted or his account compromised and he killed himself over it. And I'm just like, I look at this game and I was like, how can you have that kind of pride in this bullshit?
Damn it.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think I would freak out so much that I would kill myself over it.
Well, there's also,
that,
like,
you know, like in an MMO like that, especially like EQ, where you didn't have all the stuff like Dungeon Finder and all this crap, you know, you had to do a crap ton of work to get a character, a significant gear and elevation, I guess, in general in your place in the world. So when you had a character that had the best gear, the epic weapons and stuff like that, it was a lot more of an achievement in EverQuest than World of Warcraft. Because you had to do a lot more camping, a lot more, if you wanted to get together like a raid or even a dungeon run, you didn't have a dungeon fighter. You didn't have that kind of thing. You had to go out, make friends, and, get
well,
that.
Well, dungeon finder
wasn't
always there anyway. So it isn't like, World of Warcraft has always had this. You know?
No, but EQ still doesn't, to my knowledge.
You're saying EQ still exists?
Yes, it's still running fairly strong. Last I heard, I mean, it's no WoW in terms of numbers, but
it's like Counter Strike. It's the multiplayer game that will never die.
Yeah. So, actually, apparently, what my dad showed me is they're actually doing this thing called EQ Next, which is like it's not like an EQ 3 so much as an EQ reboot. And they're, like, giving, like, a whole new engine and all this kind of stuff. So that'll be interesting to see. But I guess they've been pretty hush-hush about that over a few years. Sounds familiar to other games. Half-Life 3. But we'll see that if and when it happens, I guess. Anyway, my favorite improvement as far as Tor goes is the leveling, because if you know me, I hate, absolutely loathe grinding. And I love the leveling in Tor. It doesn't feel like a grind at all. You just go along with the story. You know, I guess if you're one of those people that doesn't really care about the story, it might be less so. I don't know, since I eat up the story like, I don't know.
If you treat it like a process of elimination, and you start doing all the side quests, you'll start leveling ahead of people in your area.
Yeah, I do.
The game isn't it's not set up for grinding. So the side quests actually add up. Like, you can just follow the story quests for the most part and be at the level you need to be to progress in the story.
Yeah, and at some points it still gets pretty hard, even if you're ahead at the level, but. I'm at the point I'm right now, I think I'm 5 levels ahead of my area, but the difficulty still is very dependent on how good your gear is. So if your gear is still only the level of the area, even if you're 5 levels ahead, you're not going to like destroy everything there. But Yeah, you know, I find that to be good because then you still have a challenge without, you know, constantly dying. And I found that for the most part, there's been a couple exceptions where things have been a little bit more difficult than was necessary, particularly like the end of Tatooine. But in general, I've felt that the challenge, the difficulty of the challenge has been very good and the progression has been smooth. Didn't feel extraordinarily slow or extraordinarily fast. And has overall been very enjoyable.
If you are familiar with the way text was handled in Mass Effect, this game will be very familiar on that respect. The upper response being the positive point and the lower response being the negative point. And when I was...
That isn't necessarily always the case, though, but it is a good general to go by.
When I was in the instance with somebody else, there was a point where I kept getting outvoted or outrolled for the negative response. So we had some fun conversations there. And it's interesting to have the conversation kind of go back and forth. I'm pushing the good, he's pushing the bad. And you know, so it's like we have this like dual personality character, just can't make up their mind what they want to do.
And especially like when the whole group, like three people in the group, go for the light side option, and then you have the one person that has to go, no, flush him out the airlock. Phew! And they're the one, of course, that wins the roll, and everybody else is like, why would you do that?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it makes for a great time, really. And then on top of that, you got the whole social point system that you get social points for going through quests like that with people going through the conversations with a group of people. And the more people you have in the group, the more social points you get. That is good for like clothing that you need certain social ranks to wear, which is moddable. So you can like put extra stats in it so that it will, for the most part, be comparable to regular armor. The only drawback is that social clothing is all white armor.
Before we get too inside baseball here, you're talking about that SWTOR is the fastest growing MMO in history, really?
Yeah, according to what was it? I forgot now. Yeah, they have a press release actually on their main site that Star Wars: The Old Republic was the fastest growing MMO in history, had over 1 million. Subscribers within the second day after launch. By the press release on December 22nd, these subscribers had made over 3.8 million characters, and over 1 million of those were Jedi Knights and Sith Warriors, very close to 500,000 each. And actually, the greater number was 550,000 Sith Warriors.
It's a good thing too that this game was so successful, because BioWare did not disclose what the development costs of the game were, but estimates suggest that this game might be the most expensive video game ever made. But it shows, and I'm shocked because as I mentioned, I really liked Mass Effect while I was playing it, and I was like, how are they going to do that in like an MMO form? But they did, and they made it work, and people really like it. So you can tell that there was a lot of really care and quality put into this, and I appreciate that. I do.
Yeah, it's a very polished game. There's been a lot of complaining about how buggy it is, but it's really not. As far as, excuse me, if you've ever been part of an MMO launch before, the launch of The Old Republic was comparatively, speaking from personal experience, was the smoothest MMO launch I've ever been a part of. And that's saying something, because, for example, when Swig launched, it crashed on its launch day, and that was with a few hundred thousand subscribers.
Well, assuming that the monthly fee is $15, and assuming that the estimated $150 million is the binding cost, if they can maintain the 1 million subscribers they've said, and with no growth, they'll make their money back in 10 months.
Yeah, well, and I know that even after that, they had over 1.5 million.
So the higher that number gets, but I'm sure there's operating costs. I'm sure that's they're not just like counting
gone.
But
and they've had to add several servers since launch and expand server capacities since launch. But
which begs said, the question, have they reached parity yet? Have they been able to get that balanced yet, or is there still queues?
The queues, I have not had queues or seen queues in over a week, okay. Or at least a week. Anyways.
Everybody's bored with it.
No, but really, it went from almost all the servers being full, and out of those, the majority having queues on them, to my entire server list showing standard, aka medium server population, or some of them actually showing light server populations. So I have not had to deal with queues in several days. Like I said, I haven't been like kept track of the specific days, but it's been roughly a week.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and considering that the game has only been out for basically 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Right.
It's actually exactly a month to the day.
Okay.
Of this recording, the 15th. So.
Right.
I'm sorry. That I'm talking about early access. I've been in since the 15th right. of December, which was the first, or the 13th of December, which was the first day of early access.
Mm-hmm.
And
which probably existed as a load test anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Now the early access, of course, was a tiered entry process for everyone who pre-ordered the game, and the way that worked was earlier that you redeemed your pre-order code, the more early access you had.
And yeah, so they my friend was, he pre-ordered access. Like just in time to pre-order.
Yeah.
And he was chomping the bit like, they're not letting me in, let me in. And he was carrying on all day, like for the entire week. And finally, I guess on day two, they let him in. And he was like so excited. And I was like, what happened to the waiting a month to see how they do? He's like, I can't wait. I'm like, okay, have fun.
I'm just shocked with the sheer amount of content that is in, especially since all the characters are fully voiced, which yeah. I don't know how can you do that for an MMO? That sounds shocking, but they did it.
The install pretty huge, actually?
Yeah, that was going to ask, does anybody who has it installed like know like how much space it takes up? Because I'd be interested.
26 gigs, give or take.
Well, that sounds about right.
And it's pretty huge.
The closest competitor I have to that is Mass Effect, which is 18 gigabytes.
Yeah, I've noticed.
Mass Effect 2, sorry.
Well, Force Unleashed like some 20 gigs also?
Yeah, but that's all localization, actually.
Really? Is there a way? Like, because I tried to install and it was like, this is going to take 26 gigs. And I was like, never mind, I'll do it later.
Yeah.
Is there some way to like minimize your install? Because I don't have
I wish, but it doesn't. It comes with it.
Ugh.
That's Force Unleashed 2. Is 10 gigabytes.
Well, that's bad.
And if you were to go into like the folder and look at the localization, you'd see it's all there.
But I also have no intention of playing TFU2 because...
Yeah, TFU2 is kind of annoying on the PC. I don't know what the first one's like, but I almost feel like I'm going to have to buy the first one to get my Jedi rip people apart fix on. Because TFU2 is fine on the consoles, but it's so short, it's just... I want to beat them for daring to charge full price for it.
Yeah, but like everybody that I've heard that has like played TFU2 just says that it's like really redundant and there's no point. Like,
yeah, basically. That was pretty much my review of it. It's what I would rank in like some of the worst games of 2011. So
was that a release that came out this year? Oh yeah, it was. Wow.
Yep. Yeah. It was. It's kind of funny. I want to say it was like it was in a group of games where I was disappointed, like Brink and TFU2. Like, I was just hoping TFU2 would rescue me from the doldrums of Brink, and it didn't. It was very saddening for me. But
you also
forward,
found Bullet's Point disappointing, right? Bulletstorm?
No, I enjoyed Bulletstorm.
Okay, good. Sorry, you can cut that out. I was just curious.
Yeah, I enjoyed Bulletstorm. I enjoyed Crisis 2 in seasons where... the game lineup wasn't as, you know, filled with good games like 2011 was. Those games would have shown out better, I think.
Yeah.
But I have for this podcast Jonathan's random topic. This one is going to be interesting to see what comes between the three of us. I was hoping for Chad to be part of it because I know he's a PS3 fanboy.
I know.
My random topic is, what kind of gamepad do you like and why? And I'm going to start because I want to. My favorite is the 360 controller. I have a PlayStation 3, I have a 360, and I use the 360 controller with the PC. There is a driver to get the PlayStation controller to work with the PC, and I have no interest in doing that. I think the PlayStation or the Xbox 360 controller is the best by far. And not only that, but a lot of games support it natively because of the Games for Windows Live effort, and there are games that are not in Games for Windows Live that you just plug in the controller and it works. There's some glitches, like as I mentioned before, the Assassin's Creed 1, Assassin's Creed 2, you need a little fix to get the wireless controller to work. But up until recently, I have been using a wired controller, so it wasn't a problem for me. But the weight is a little heavier than I would like. The rechargeable battery packs are kind of wonky in my experience. But if you turn off vibration, the batteries last what I would consider a very acceptable amount of time. The controller has the best weighting. The layout doesn't feel conflicting. One of the things I don't like about the PlayStation controller is the right analog nub feels like it's just kind of impeding on the buttons.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion. And that could be because I have kind of wide little fingers. But either way, I feel like the 360 controller is more comfortable. Those triggers, L2, R2, are really feel like triggers. I don't know what Sony was thinking with these weird rounded the wrong direction nubs they put
in.
And I know, David, you've got a Logitech Leica DualShock controller.
So yeah, it's almost identical to the PlayStation.
Yeah, but you probably don't have you probably don't have the PlayStation 3 DualShock.
I have not picked up the PlayStation 3. But speaking of my Logitech controller, which, like I said, is almost identical to a PlayStation 2 DualShock, I really like that one. I have not used a lot of game pads, but that one, given that I have really tiny girly hands, fits my hands very nice. But it still has a size that it probably could fit a slight, someone with a little bit beefier hands, still fine than, it's got comfortable weight to it. I think it's actually a little bit more comfortable weight wise than the PlayStation 2 controller, which I always thought was a little bit weak and light.
I would say the same thing with PlayStation 3. It's kind of light and flimsy feeling.
Yeah, and so as far as that Logitech goes, it's got some good weight to it. It's also got a vibrate mode, which I never use because, again, unnecessary. And
yeah, I find vibrate annoying, actually. Sony, when they released the PlayStation 3, actually weren't going to do vibration. If you remember, the PlayStation 3 came out and there was this big outcry. Why'd they remove vibration? They're like, nobody likes vibration. And I was like, yes, I don't like vibration. Don't put it back. And they did. I'm like, damn it. The one thing they did really wrong with the PlayStation 3
controller,
they added that balance thing. So it was their weak sauce answer to the Wii. If your character is going across a balancing beam, you can use the controller to balance them. And if the bad guys grab you, you can shake the controller to get them off. I'm like, I really don't want the game on that level. That's why I've never gotten a Wii. I don't like that kind of experience. What about you, Patrick?
It works for some.
Well, I agree with you on this one. Xbox 360 all the way. But rather than just say what I like about it, I want to compare it to some of the other models just to sort of get a foundation. So I'll backtrack. My first console was the Nintendo GameCube, and everything was fine. Everything was hunky dory. Everything was perfect. But by the time I got around to getting an Xbox, the original model, it was really funny because, I mean, goddamn, those things were huge.
The
honestly,
controllers
they were just they were freaking. Do you remember the controllers for the original Xbox, the first one? Oh my
but
god!
You know, what oh, I god, thought they were similar massive. To. They were similar to the. What was it, the Saturn?
Which yeah, also they had, were, because they had big, space in the middle.
Yeah, they were they were very big, and I remember this. I remember picking up the Saturn controller, I'm like, I feel like I'm holding a plate.
Yeah, and but the thing is, but you look at the Wii, and it's just, it doesn't, like, I was sort of ambivalent about it when it first came out. I was like, all right, whatever, this is kind of dumb, but having gone back and playing Skyward Sword recently, which is like my first Wii experience in like a year, honestly. Like I barely even I immediately noticed, oh, this is actually really problematic. Number one, because if you're actually trying to use like the remote thing, there's this damn cord between the nunchuck and the remote, and you can't actually be too physical with it because the thing will go flopping around everywhere. And it seems like a minor issue, but it's actually a real problem. And I don't know why they haven't addressed this and tried to make like a wireless version of it yet. I think
what
it
the wireless nunchuck?
Yeah.
They have those.
Do they have that? All right, but
yeah,
I mean,
I
haven't
seen. I don't know if there's an official one, but we have one at my house.
Yeah, there's a lot of a lot of if you go to third party stuff, like you can get a controller for the PlayStation that looks like a 360 controller, and vice versa. You can get the PlayStation DualShock controller designed for the Xbox. So you can, if you have a particular comfort level but a desire to cross over to the other playing field, you can satisfy that need.
And the other thing I noticed immediately about the like Wiimote is that like within like a week of playing, well, I haven't even played this game for a week, but like I get these wrist aches now just from like for having to twist the thing around so much. Honestly, my wrist still hurts and I haven't played this game in like a week. Like it's weird how lasting of an effect that is, but I just don't understand. Anyway, but
I played through Just Cause 2 entirely on the Xbox and the Xbox 360 that is, and I noticed some strange discomforts from holding the 360 controller, but they're in fingers that develop problems from long playing sessions on the PC, which suggests to me that this is because it's a different ergonomic experience that I think would eventually pass. And it for the most part, if I didn't play for too terribly long, it wasn't a big deal, so I was fine with that.
Right, but getting back to why the 360 controller is like my favorite. So, you know, keeping all this stuff in mind, you know, I have some friends that will swear by the DualShock and the DualShock for the PlayStation 3. They say it's like the perfect controller, but, you know, I pick it up in my hands and, you know, yeah, I kind of like the layout, but it's like, it's just, it feels too small. You know, it feels a little too dinky. I feel like I'm holding like a Super Nintendo controller.
That's why the Japanese prefer it to the Xbox, because the DualShock is for smaller hands than Japanese by, you know, by and large, are smaller than US.
But it's not even that it's like small. It's small and it's like flat. It's not very ergonomic at all. Like it doesn't like sort of fit in.
Yeah.
What I like about the 360 controller is that it's sort of the perfect balance.
So it feels a little more organic.
You know, of course you have the extreme example, which is the original Xbox controller, a controller that's too big, but it's right there where it's not too big, it's not too small. It sort of just fits. The button layout I think is perfect. All the buttons are like exactly where they need to be. And actually, honestly, if you look at it, and this is the same reason why, like if I'm playing a Wii game, I don't like the Wii control. So if there's an option for a GameCube controller, I will plug the GameCube controller in and just use that. Yeah. And like the Xbox 360 and the GameCube have basically the same button layout and they have basically the same size and weight and they feel pretty much the same in my hand. And that might just be because of why I like it, but I think it's more complicated than that. I think it's just because it really has a nice common ground. It's very adaptable. I like the wireless ability. It works very well, I think.
Did you ever play with the N64 controller?
Yeah, what were they thinking?
Yeah.
Where do you hold it, even? It's like...
Yeah, your left hand's in the middle, and your right hand's on the right-hand side. I never understood it myself.
Why?
Yeah. They had one first-person shooter on there. It was the Turok game. And I experienced the whole vertigo, the sickness you get from playing a first-person perspective game in that game, mainly because it was so badly done. And it reversed it because, you know, WASD is handled on the keyboard, you know, with your left hand, and similarly on a controller, the WASD perspective control would be the left joystick, which makes it all the more stupid that on Turok it was on the right hand.
So, I hate when that happens.
But there's a couple people who complain that games don't allow them to, like, flip-flop those two things, which I don't understand what's with as computerized as today's consoles are. Why? What is the big deal to give us a different button layout to let us customize it fully? I mean, obviously you have some defaults that people will tend to pick, but why can't it be custom? Is it really that hard?
I hate when they do that. They don't let you set your own keys because I always, 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 always use key mapping. And that's just another reason why I tend to be a PC gamer over a console gamer, because they don't let you do that as much in console.
The Transformers War for Cybertron was on the PC was immutable. You could not change the keyboard layout. Luckily, most of their selections were exactly what you wanted.
That's the result of a horrible console port.
Yeah. The game ran great, and it played fine, although they limited the frame rate to 30, which is just spankably wrong. But the game ran fine. But it's one of those things where you probably have an ideal system and you can run it, or you don't and you can't. And that's probably where it comes down to. But it's interesting. You know, David favors the DualShock-like controller of his Logitech, and so probably by extension would favor the DualShock due to familiarity. Patrick is more 360-ish because it's, you know, following the etymology is closer to his GameCube. I
don't even say it's that. I just like the layout. I think it just works.
I skipped the consoles in the middle there. Like, I had a PlayStation 1, I had a PlayStation 2, both of which I had very few games on. It was the same story as I have now. If it came to the PC, that's where I played it. And so the 360 controller just kind of crossed over because of the games on the PC that used it, which to me it worked out very well, because then I didn't have to think about the button layout, and even if I did want to think about it, I could change it because it was a fucking PC game. So, you know, push come to shove, we did pretty good on that front. So that's about where we're pretty much done.
All right, well, this has been Jonathan.
See y'all.
Patrick.
Goodbye.
And your host, David. Thank you for joining us, and stay tuned for next month's Over the Fence. This call is being recorded. If you don't like that, go to hell. My caller didn't work. Stop it.
That would make me wet in my shorts. You said something to your brother. I'm like, you never pay attention. I will stab you. And I don't think that we're going to have outtakes from this cast, even with the pre-recording stuff.
Really? No outtakes.
Yeah.
We need outtakes. Outtakes are the best. We don't have outtakes. I will stab you.
I'm just so you know, I don't bleed outtakes.
Now you will, because I say so.